नावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासदि गौरभक्तवृन्द। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे।
Okay, so we continue with the preface. So any question or anything to what we are even through? Okay, so since we do read through the preface and the introduction,
yes.
Maybe I'll just read some passages since we don't have the introduction and the preface as on the paper as a study guide. Then I'll just read some passages and then we'll comment to it. And then with questions, then we can just stop and discuss whatever the relevant questions may be. And hopefully from Monday then we should have already some papers. Right? I think Pandav Bandava is...
we discussed them. He's working.
Okay.
If you want to review what you've done already,
so it's Srila Prabhupada writes, then Srila Prabhupada Goswami elaborated the teachings of the Lord with profound knowledge or of revealed scriptures and authoritative references from various Vedic literatures. Shashinivas Acharya describes in his prayers to the Siddh Goswamis that they were all highly learned scholars and not only in Sanskrit but also in foreign languages such as Persian and Arabic. They very scrutinizingly studied all the Vedic scriptures in order to establish the cult of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu on the authorized principles of Vedic knowledge. The present Krishna consciousness movement is also based on the authority of Srila Prabhupada Goswami Prabhupada. We are therefore generally known as Rupanugas or followers in the footsteps of Srila Prabhupada Goswami Prabhupada. It is only for our guidance that Srila Prabhupada Goswami prepared his book Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which is now presented in the form of the Nectar of Devotion. Persons engaged in Krishna consciousness movement may take advantage of this great literature and be very solidly studied in Krishna consciousness. So it's situated. So here, this is an important point. Prabhupada is establishing actually what the Krishna consciousness is. So he is pointing out that we are not just following anything or not just whimsically not trying to do whatever the mind dictates. We are Rupanugas. Rupanugas means that we follow the teachings of Srila Prabhupada Goswami, who is in the parampara. He follows the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and through that parampara then we are following the bona fide teachings of Lord Sri Krishna. So that's very important to know, because then we must establish actually who we are. In whatever we start, as we mentioned, in any activity, then we start with sambandha. Sambandha, then, as we mentioned, are relationships. So first we need to know who we are. Then we need to know who is the person, or what is the goal, and what is our relationship to that person, to the goal. Then only if we know the relationship, then we can think of how do we achieve that goal, how do we please that person, whatever we want to do. So we need to know where do we belong. To need to know who we are, we need to know where do we belong and who are we. So as Prabhupada mentions in many places, we are not this body. But what does that mean? That doesn't, no, we may take it, it's a phrase. Okay, so yeah, I heard that many times. Okay, no, what's next? It may be, we may heard it many times. But why did we hear it many times? Because it is very important. We need not only to know that we are not this body, but we need to realize that we are not this body. Only when we realize that we are not this body, then we can very quickly progress on the path of devotional service. Because until we think that we are this body, then it will be very difficult to get detached from the material situation. And we need to transcend this material world to get back to Godhead. So it's very important point which Srila Prabhupada states here. So to know that what is Krishna consciousness, first we need to know how do we, what is our relationship to Krishna consciousness? How do we belong to Krishna consciousness? So that's the definition. We follow the instructions of our spiritual masters, and they are connected through Srila Rupa Goswami to the parampara, following the teachings of Lord Krishna and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So this is the definition of who we are, where do we belong, and then who we are the spirit soul whom we are trying to go back to Godhead. Yes. But right now, how to get there? So then we need to know in this position, in this condition state, then we need to know how to get there, and that's through the parampara. So following the instruction of the spiritual master, then following Guru Sadhu Shastra, then we can transcend actually this material body, material world, and then get to the original position, which is the jiva in the spiritual world. Now, the definition of devotional service. So bhakti means devotional service. Every service has some attractive feature which drives the servitor progressively on and on. Every one of us within this world is perpetually engaged in some sort of service, and the impetus for such service is the pleasure we derive from it. Driven by affection for his wife and children, a family man works day and night. A philanthropist works in the same way for love of the greater family, and a nationalist for the cause of his country and countrymen. That force which drives the philanthropist, the householder and the nationalist is called rasa. or a kind of mellow relationship whose taste is very sweet. Bhakti rasa is a mellow, different from the ordinary rasa enjoyed by mundane workers. Mundane workers labor very hard day and night in order to relish a certain kind of rasa, which is understood as sense gratification. The relish or taste of the mundane rasa does not long endure, and therefore mundane workers are always apt to change their position of enjoyment. So here, what it is that drives a person, as Srila Prabhupada explains, it's the taste for something. So that's the goal, that will be the prajna. I want to achieve something. So as the family man, you know, so then he works hard day and night to maintain the family. But the maintenance, it's not giving the pleasure. The pleasure actually is that seeing that the children are happy, the wife is happy, so then doesn't get on my case. So that's the ultimate happiness. So there is something which he expects. He expects that by doing so, he is going to gain pleasure. So this is what it's rasa. But here in the material world, the problem is that we are not putting we want the pleasure ourselves. So for ourselves. So therefore, we are unable to, I mean, we cannot really call it as a pure rasa. For example, now you have a, like, what is a friendship? Now somebody may define a friendship as, well, I do something for you, and you do something for me. Among people in the world, it's quite common definition. But is that real friendship? What would be greater? Okay, if you do something for me, I'll do something for you. Or if you have money, or until you have money, I'll be always with you. But if you don't have money, then what? I don't need you. You don't need me. So, but if we have a friend, whom no matter what, we are in good situation. He is with us. Now we get into a bad situation. We lose our money. So we don't have anything to offer. Now, who stays with us? That's a real friend. He is going to try to help us, maybe to take us out of that bad situation, find out what he can do for us, how he can help us, without expecting anything in return. When you get sick, right, you may have some accident, and then you may call one of your friends, and then he will say, well, I'm busy now, I cannot come, no. I'll come after some time. Then how do you feel? But if you call your friend and he says, yeah, I'll be there immediately, and then just he comes, helps you, and then takes care of whatever necessity must be done, how would you feel now with such a person? That person who helps you when you are in need, then you, that's when you taste the real friendship. So you are in need, and then your real friend comes and helps you. This taste you cannot really get anywhere. You cannot buy it. You may have millions or billions of dollars, but still you cannot buy it. It's a feeling which that's the real rasa, and it's not possible to get it otherwise. When you you have a friend and he is in need, then what is your friendship with him? What is your relationship with him? Would you go and help him? Would you offer your help even knowing he has nothing to offer? If you do, then you are fortunate, because you have a real friend. And nowadays in this material world, it is very difficult to find. So if you can taste rasa in the friendship or any of the five rasas, if you can, then you can experience it and realize what rasa is, and then you can try to go and taste rasa, what does it mean to take shelter of lotus feet of Krishna. If we don't care for rasa, we are here just not to only survive, I don't want to have any relationship with anybody, only with Krishna. What happens when you go to Goloka? It's not you and Krishna. There are unlimited devotees. You are going to have relationship with those devotees. You have to relate with them. You will be helping them, so then they can perform their services, so then the other devotees can perform services to the Lord. But if you think that you don't need anybody and it's just you and Krishna, this is a Kanishtha mentality. So to taste what actually the real rasa is, then now we have the opportunity to develop the relationships among the devotees. Because if you understand, if you realize what the relationship, what the rasa actually is here, then it will be easier for you to develop your relationship with your spiritual master, with true devotees, with Krishna. That's why, now what are the most important elements in devotional service? It's described in the Natural Instruction. There's Darati Prati Grihnati. Guhyam akyati pričati, bhungte bojate. So these are six elements which, when they are actually exchanged among devotees, they enhance your devotional service. Why? What are those? Darati prati grihnati. So you give and accept gifts. When do we give gifts? Like we have somebody's some birthday on Christmas, right? Christmas and just give gifts, right? But okay, you give if you want to please somebody, and you receive from somebody who wants to please you. So giving and receiving, it's pleasing. It increases the relationship. Guhyam akheti prichati. If somebody has a difficulty, then I should be able, if it's in my capacity to help him, then listen to him. Maybe what he says, maybe I have the capacity to help, so then I should listen and then try to help him. And if I have some difficulty, I should have somebody whom I can turn to know, reveal my difficulties, so then somebody can help me. It's very difficult if you don't have anybody. And if you have to keep your problems only with you and you don't know what to do. It's very, very bad situation. That's why you have to have somebody. And who is the somebody? That's your intimate friend. Bhungte bhojayate. Then when you really want to do something, then make a feast. Offer a feast, serve. Then you see, nice feast and everybody is happy. So then you can relish the happiness of the devotees. And if somebody does offer a feast, so come and then have a nice time. Like we had Panihati. It was a very nice example. Then when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to Arvitachara's house, there are so many examples of serving prasad, cooking, eating. The Chaitanya Charitamrita, many pages are described about. Yes?
I just have a comment about the point about revealing your mind.
Mm-hmm.
Because it can be quite difficult with the conditioning of the Western mentality that is also influencing Islam. That sometimes there's a risk that if we reveal our difficulties, it might, go around and that other people will be informed. So it's very important that the confidentiality has to be there.
It is.
And also that there's an understanding among in the person that we are revealing the mind to, that even if it's a difficulty that is impious or against devotional principles, that at least we can see that it's a difficulty and we're trying to give it up. And as it is said in the 10 offenses against the holy name, it is an offense to maintain material desires, so that we have it is not maybe the big problem, but that we're trying to maintain it. So what I mean to say is that I know one instance where a devotee was in a management position,
mm-hmm.
had some difficulties and was revealing his mind, and immediately he was taken away from that management position, even though that he was trying to get rid of this anartha that he was revealing. So I just wanted to,
yeah.
to say this.
I understand. No, there are many problems with authority structure. That needs to be worked out. But when I specifically mentioned you have to have some intimate friend whom you can reveal your mind, because it's based on trust. The authority should develop trust in those whom they take care of, so then freely you can reveal your mind, not thinking that it will be misused. This is actually the difference between a manager and a leader. See, the simple definition, we can say that manager, he knows how to work with people, but the leader, he works for people. So the leader, when he gets a person, then his relationship with him is that the leader has a vision, he wants to achieve some goal, and he can take that person with him to achieve that goal. So on the path, because of the material world, he understands, the leader understands, that there will be so many obstacles. But together they can overcome these obstacles. Now if he has some difficulty, and now he finds a solution for the difficulty for the other person, he will feel sheltered. That's what leader must give, a shelter. So then he surrenders to the person, knowing that he can feel very secure. and the other person knowing that then he feels responsible for that for him, and together they can actually not achieve not the goal. But if we are just looking for something what's convenient for us, as long as he is okay, then all right. But if there's some problem, better get rid of him, get somebody else. That's more the management, because they may not have no great vision. They don't have maybe goal. They just know we need to get this done. No, just this one portion, and then I have this many people, so I'll do it, and then get over it, and then get rid of the people. So there may not be trust, maybe, but may not be trust. So we have to be very careful whom we are opening the mind to. But based on trust, we open the mind to a person whom we feel that he will help us to overcome the obstacle. And as trust works, first you start with some small things, develop the relationship. And so if we see that not the person actually he is trying to help us, so we come to the point of realization that the person actually he is our well-wisher. So we feel comfortable and sheltered in his presence. So then we can open our mind freely and not be fearful that he is going to put us down or misuse it. Such person, a leader, when he sees that somebody is not fit for the post, what he is doing, then he can explain to the person that for that reason, what he finds, then he is not. This is not the best position for him. But then the other person probably wouldn't feel bad because of the trust which he has in him, and he will take it, take another way, another position, not trusting the person that yes, this is the best for me. So the relationship, it keeps intact, it's maintained. So the shelter remains. But if we he did something wrong, now I don't talk to him anymore, then it destroys the relationship, and that's it. So, and then we feel accomplished, I got rid of him. That's not the way how relationships work. So we have to be very careful. How do we present things? How do we maintain things? Always keep the relationship always a priority. So when we find that somebody has some difficulty and we are in position to help him, then if he reveals our mind, we are obliged to keep it as a confidential, and then try to help him as much as we can. That will increase the trust. Then we can continue helping that person, and based on that we can really develop deep relationship, otherwise not. But why do we not keep things confidential? It's only through, look, I know something about that person, he is actually not good. Just to show that we know something more than somebody else, to show off. So that's not a good quality. So the relationships are extremely important. So we have to maintain them. Relationships, once broken, you cannot repair it. You can build new one, but you cannot really repair the relationship. And to build a relationship takes a long time. To break it takes a moment. So that's very important to keep it in mind. So when these six actually are exchanged among the devotees, then it helps us to understand what are the relationship among the devotees, and it helps us to understand what is my relationship towards the Lord. So then I can, you know, find the sambandha. I can find out who I am. And from there, then I can find out how to achieve the Lord. And then as Prabhupada gives his, okay, for example, an ordinary family man who works very hard day and night and is successful in giving comforts to the members of his family, thereby relishes a kind of mellow, but his whole advancement of material happiness immediately terminates along with his body as soon as his life is over. Death is therefore taken as the representative of God for the atheistic class of man. The devotee realizes the presence of God by devotional service, whereas the atheist realizes the presence of God in the shape of death. So, there are two aspects. No, two principles. Never forget Krishna and always remember Krishna. So as we were mentioning before, there is a difference. If always remembering Krishna means you are always absorbed in Krishna, that automatically means you don't forget him. So, and this is the higher principle. That's what you want to achieve. Always remember Krishna. But what happens at the time we cannot remember Krishna? So if the instruction it's not being applied, then there's a prohibition. Never forget Krishna. It's as an example, like say with when we come to the Krishna consciousness, then we have certain ideas of what's good for eating, right? So we cook what we like, and then what do we do with that? When we cook, say we like pasta, okay? Pasta, we finish, we cook it, and then we know we offer it to the Lord. So the activity we perform according to what we like, what we know. But the end of the activity, the result, we offer to the Lord. So we do it based on our mentality, but the result we offer means we don't forget the Lord. But after some time, doing it many times, and then we may start to inquire, reading the Shastra, seeing in Chaitanya Charitamrita that what are the feasts Chaitanya Mahaprabhu relishes, and we don't hear anything about pasta. So then we ask, Krishna, I'm offering a pasta here every day because I like it. But do you actually like the pasta the most? Does Srimati Radhani cook it or not, or what she does? Then we go deeper into the Shastra and we may find out what it is that Srimati Radhani cooks for Krishna. What it is that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu relishes every day. And then, how to cook it, how to do. So, then we start to research and to see what and how we should do. So then we cook the same way as the devotees not the great devotees, for the Lord. So then, in the first case, we do what we know the best, and then we offer the result. But in this case, then when we go to buy the sabjis, when we start cooking the preparation, then we think of Krishna, how to make it, so then it's the best for him, how to make it most tasteful, how to make it so then he relishes. So now, even throughout making the preparation, we are thinking of Krishna. So it's not just the end, it's not what we wanted to make and offering the result. We are offering the whole activity, including the result, to the Lord. So throughout the activity, we were Krishna conscious. We were thinking about Krishna. So this is the higher principle. So when we are trying to not to forget Krishna, then we may have some attraction, and that's why we do. Well, yeah, I like, no, that Krishna is nice, okay, let's offer him something. I cook something here. So some attraction is there, but as we do it, then we should develop affection. We should develop love for him. And then, based on that love, then we want to do the best for him based on his desires, not our desires. So that's the difference. So in the beginning, whatever we can, whatever we do, the result offered to the Lord. But don't stop there. As we are progressing, try to see how we can offer the whole activity to the Lord. This is the important point. So, as the atheists, they realize the presence of God in the form of death. So they are afraid to die. Why? Because they don't know what's going to be there. But the devotee, he serves the Lord, so during the devotional service, he is fully absorbed in the Lord. So he is not afraid, because he knows that he will continue his service even after he leaves his body. So that's the realization which the devotee has when he understands that actually he is not his body. He is the servant of the Lord. But the atheist, he doesn't understand that he is not, he is this body. So when the body dies, and he sees that everybody is dying, so he's also going to die, then everything is finished for him. And as far as material necessities are concerned, the human civilization at the present moment is very much advanced in living comfortably, but still we are not happy, because we are missing the point. The material comforts of life alone are not sufficient to make us happy. The vivid example is America, the richest nation of the world, having all facilities for material comfort, is producing a class of men completely confused and frustrated in life. I'm appealing herewith to such confused men to learn the art of devotional service as directed in the Nectar of Devotion, and I'm sure that the fire of material existence burning within their hearts will be immediately extinguished. The root cause of our dissatisfaction is that our dormant loving propensity has not been fulfilled despite our great advancement in the materialistic way of life. The Nectar of Devotion will give us practical hints how we can live in the material world perfectly engaged in devotional service and thus fulfill all our desires in this life and the next. The Nectar of Devotion is not presented to condemn any way of materialistic life, but the attempt is to give information to religionists, philosophers and people in general how to love Krishna. One may live without material this one may live without material discomfort, but at the same time he should learn the art of loving Krishna. At the present moment, we are inventing so many ways to utilize our propensity to love, but factually we are missing the real point, Krishna. We are watering all parts of the tree, but missing the tree's roots. We are trying to keep our body fit by all means, but we are neglecting to supply foodstuff to the stomach. Missing Krishna means missing one's self also. Real self-realization and the realization of Krishna go together simultaneously. For example, seeing oneself in the morning means seeing the sunrise also. Without seeing the sunshine, no one can see himself. Similarly, unless one realizes Krishna, there is no question of self-realization. So it's, Prabhupada mentions, we are producing many ways or many devices to enjoy. But what for? See, it's great. But a person cannot have a relationship with a machine, with a device. The device can become a tool to develop relationship with somebody. But it can only be with another living entity. Now, the people are becoming confused because they think that the machines, the computer, or not this, that, or the car, it's some living object. They start to develop relationship with the object, thinking that actually they found a relationship. But it cannot happen, because the relationship, it goes both ways. So then, the confusion lies in that we start to depend on, we start to think that that's enough for our life. Just to have some nice house, nice car, and that we can just enjoy the life. It may go for some time, but what happens, that person, he is going to die alone. He has nobody who actually has any relationship with him. And this is very, very painful. So what's missing there? As Prabhupada mentions, it's Krishna. When we develop the understanding of that Krishna is the person, Krishna is the goal of our life, then everything we can center around him. We can see the devotees. We can go on and develop relationship with the devotees based on Krishna in the center. And we will be happy. Because Krishna will never let us down. He is the only one who is the greatest of the well-wishers. His devotees, they are well-wishers. They want us to go back to worry. They are not envious of us. So we should have trust in Krishna. We should have trust in his devotees, because through that system, through that process, then we can go back to him. Otherwise, no other chance, no other option. So we move then on to the introduction. And then in the introduction, then invoking auspiciousness. Lord Shri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the cause of all causes, the reservoir of all rasas or relationships, which are called neutrality, servitorship, friendship, parenthood, the conjugal love, comedy, compassion, fear, chivalry, ghastliness, wonder and devastation. He is the supreme attractive form, and by his universal and transcendental attractive features he has captivated all the gopis, headed by Taraka, Palika, Shyama, Lalita and ultimately Srimati Radharani. Let his lordship's grace be on us so that there may not be any hindrance in the execution of this duty of writing the Nectar of Devotion, impelled by his divine grace Shri Srimad Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Prabhupada. So that's how Srila Prabhupada starts. So to invoke the auspiciousness again, he establishes the goal, he establishes himself as the servant of his guru, and then he states the purpose. So by that, then now he starts the book, and then he will be able then to truly reveal the meaning of the Nectar of Devotion. Why did Prabhupada write Bhagavad Gita as it is? There were so many copies of Bhagavad Gita before. But the problem with those is that they were not translated by devotees really. So they were scholars. No. So they in Sanskrit they were very very good. But they didn't know actually the meaning. So they commented and they had some doubts or why this, why Gita was in Kurukshetra, why not somewhere else, and so many doubts they just bring just to show that they are scholars. So they enjoy themselves in the Gyan that they know so much. But how many of them actually applied any of the instructions from Bhagavad Gita in their life? So Srila Prabhupada, he lives Bhagavad Gita. So because of that, he is the most qualified to write and comment on Bhagavad Gita. So the same, now he puts himself as a servant of his guru. He is the Rupanuga. So then based on that, then he is able now to reveal what actually it is that Drupa Goswami wanted to present. So not just the word by word, but actually the meaning, the mood. And that's the most important. Yes?
Can you explain more what is that mood when we speak about the mood as essence of somebody's teachings?
Okay. So, there is always a reason why something is written. There must be, again, sambandha abhideya prayojana. Somebody wants to achieve some goal, to give something to somebody. So then, establish sambandha, then the abhideya achieve the goal. Srila Vyasadeva, he wrote Bhagavatam. But before that, he wrote down the Vedas. Now, what was the problem with the Vedas? What was his goal? His goal was to establish that Vasudev, he is the Supreme Personality of God, Krishna. So by writing the Vedas, it was there. It's in the Vedas. The conclusion of the Vedas is that Krishna is the Supreme. But it's not so clear. The Vedas are written for people with every possible mentality. Anybody can follow the Vedas, anybody can find instructions for themselves. So even people who want to eat meat in the Vedas, no, you find a way how to do it. But the conclusion of that is, those who really want to transcend this material world don't. They don't do that. But people who cannot not give up, then they will be looking for passages like this. But in that passage, then there is a process how to do it. And then when doing it, so then the animal which is going to be slaughtered, then before that there is a mantra, and the mantra you chant that now in this lifetime I'm killing you, but the next lifetime you get the chance to kill me. So then he is now getting bound more into the karma. So it's a contrast. But because of that, then you have to take another birth, and who knows how many times. So then those who are really looking how to transcend this material world, why would they get into this? So then, now because it was confusing, so then Shri Vyasadev, based on his guru's instruction, then writes Bhagavatam. And Bhagavatam is just for the devotees, just for those who are looking for how to achieve the Lord, how to please the Lord, how to apply the devotional service to the Lord in their life. So it's Bhagavatam has many examples of devotees, how they dealt with devotional service in their life. And then how we can apply it to ourselves. So it's shown, and it's not that Bhagavatam is now 5,000 years old, therefore it doesn't apply. No, the principles of Bhagavatam apply now, and that it will apply now anytime in the future. So again, there are, for any mentality, you can find a way how you can engage yourself with devotional service. But Bhagavatam is very clear. It shows that there is no confusion in that Krishna is the supreme, and the only way how we can achieve him is by devotional service. So that's the conclusion, that's actually the mature conclusion of the Vedas. That's the Srimad Bhagavatam. So what was the point?
What does it mean,
the mood?
Oh, okay, so the mood, yes. Now, the mood is that, yeah, that's what it is, that he wanted to establish Krishna as the supreme. Now, in the Vedas he did, but it wasn't so clear, so the mood wasn't fully understood. Only by those who were looking for. But then he wrote Bhagavatam, and then mood of Bhagavatam is very clear. Nobody can twist the Bhagavatam such a way so then it doesn't look like that it's purely about devotional service, and then to not doubt that Krishna is the Supreme Lord. So that's why it was not, so the mood was fully shown. So we have to understand the mood, why is it written? Rupa Goswami, he writes Nectar of Devotion. Why is he writing it? He's not writing it because he has nothing to do. He's writing it because he wants to give something to the devotees, so then they can progress in their path. So the mood is how to achieve the Lord, to help them in the process, to apply themselves. And as Srila Prabhupada also mentioned, that it doesn't mean that you give up everything. The nectar of devotion is to show you how to apply your mentality, your conditioning in your life such a way so you can connect it to Krishna. That's the conclusion, that's the meaning of it. So that's the mood.
Yeah.
does that mean that if devotees are trying to bend the Srimad Bhagavatam, for example, to show that even if you have the attraction to the opposite sex, you shouldn't get married, it means that they didn't understand the nature of devotion?
To bend the...
Yeah.
Okay.
I have seen, you know, in my yatra that there are some devotees that mm-hmm. are saying whatever is in the Bhagavatam and saying that only says that we shouldn't get married, or basically what it says, and they're preaching that even to people who have the attraction for the opposite sex, you know, they should just give it up and renounce it. And
see, the Bhagavatam shows you path. If you don't want to get married, how to do it.
Yeah.
It shows you the path, if you get married, what you should do.
Exactly.
So, depends on the mentality. It's true, if you can follow the duties of brahmachari, that means follow the authorities and then perform devotional service as a brahmachari, so no need to get married, it's better. But if you have desires and if you have the needs, you will not be able to follow your duties as brahmachari, you will be nobody. You will be neither brahmachari nor grihastha, and then you will have no really option even to go back to Godhead, because no, there is no ashram as such. So then for people who cannot, then do get married. But the Bhagavatam shows you what you should do, how to deal with women. What is the needs of each? What are the needs of the man? What are the needs of a woman? How to combine it? What is the relationship? So it expands. So then we go through the process of Grihastha Ashram, and the goal of Grihastha Ashram is to actually find out that there is no really no the need for it, but we need to realize it. Once we realize that, then there is no difference in between if we realize it as a brahmacharis following the duties of a brahmacharis, or as a grihasthas following the duties of the grihasthas. But the realization must be there in order for us to be able to go back to Godhead. So if somebody needs to get married, he will have to get married. But if somebody doesn't need to, then no, he should follow duties of a brahmachari. But if somebody is not honest to oneself and doesn't want to get married because he's lazy to get married, but he needs that, then that's a bachelor, that's not really a brahmachari. But for such, he will not get the realization. Especially for people who are going to try to take advantage. Well, okay, as a brahmachari I'm supposed to be dependent on my authority. So okay, let's leave it there and then I'll get my own apartment and I'll just do my own thing. But I can work, be independent, have money, but because I'm not married, I'm not responsible for anybody, so I can enjoy myself as I want. So, I mean, it looks like it's, you know, the best of all. But what happens is that he doesn't get the realization. And he actually thinks that he is doing well. And then because of that, he will not have the need to go back to Godhead. He is perfectly situated here. So then he will not have even desire to, because, yeah, I'm great. I don't feel dissatisfied. Yeah, let's take birth again, it will be great. That's the problem. Because following duties of a brahmachari in brahmachari ashram, one gets realization. If that cannot be, get married. And then go through it. It's harder. But get the realization also. Once realized, no difference. But if not realized, why should we even want to go back to God? It's just only talk, but it's not a real need.
Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare.